Om, 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 om. All right. Okay, very good.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvabhutakuhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha. Om. Good. Welcome to you all. Welcome also to our many students attending these classes regularly online. First of all, let me wish you all a happy Deepavali. Many of you have been celebrating. That's wonderful. And yesterday we had a nice, simple celebration, puja and meditation. Nice we could do that. We'll continue with our text today, and let me introduce this topic with I think a very important observation. In our last class, we had discussed that Shankara here is giving us a very profound analysis of ordinary experience. And what is demonstrated is that in this ordinary experience we're having right now is something extraordinary, but overlooked. This is exactly what Vedanta is about. And in particular, and something we've discussed many times here in this class, and that is the consciousness by which this experience is known, that consciousness is in fact the so-called inner divinity. It is Satchitananda, Atma, unborn, uncreated, limitless, etc. So where we've arrived then is that based on Shruti and Yukti and Anubhava, that is, an analysis of our experience based on scriptural guidance. So that includes scriptural guidance. Analysis is Yukti, and Anubhava is experience. So this is Vedanta in action, so to speak. So based on this very profound analysis of our experience through the eyes of the ancient rishis, we are led to the certainty that the consciousness by which your changing mental activities are known is in fact unchanging. So we've had this discussion many times before. This leads then to what we can call a cognitive shift. That is, previously you thought you were a human being, body, mind, senses, mind, you know, thoughts, emotions, all of that. And now you're led to understand that your true nature is Satchitananda Atma. To understand that your Swarupa, your true nature, is Satchitananda Atma, is a cognitive shift. Cognitive shift means previously you didn't say my true nature is Satchitananda Atma. Now I know my true nature is Satchitananda Atma. That's a cognitive shift. That's only step one. It's a big step, I know, definitely. So what do they say? The first step is a big, or the last step. Watch out for, in the stairs, watch out for the last step. Well, this one is the first one. And not really the first, but it is a big step. But it is certainly not the conclusive step. Why? Because to know that, underline that word in your mind, to know that my Surupa is Satchidananda Atma, really defines it as conceptual, cognitive. We use that word. My guru used that word, cognitive shift. And it's crucial, but it's not enough, because you can know that your true nature, that means I'm putting it in quotation marks. You can, what do they call this? Air quotes. That's a nice expression. So using air quotes, you know that my true nature is Satchidananda Atma. But when somebody insults you, you still get angry. What's going on? Satchidananda Atma gets angry? What? So this is the point. And this needs to be stressed right now before we see this series of verses. And that is, cognitive shift leaves the understanding at a conceptual level, grammatically, at a third person level. Look at the statement. My true nature as Satchidananda Atma, my true nature is Satchidananda Atma. My is first person, but my true nature being Satchidananda Atma, that part of the expression is in the third person grammatically. Shankara is about to use first person language in this verse. We'll see in just a moment. In fact, why don't we do that? Let's see the verse, and then I will complete this line of thought. Okay, there's a verse. Okay. Ajoham chamaro mrityur, ajoham chamaro mrityur, ajaro bhaya hevacha, ajaro bhaya hevacha, sarvagnya sarvadrik shuddha, sarvadrik sarvadrik shuddha, iti buddho na jayate, iti buddho na jayate. Notice he uses first-person language here, as he's done in other sections of the Upadesha Sahasri. Ajaha aham. Aham, of course, being the Sanskrit pronoun, I. I am ajaha. If consciousness is unchanging, how can it get born? I am, by the way, chamara, don't think fan. Chamara. Amara means immortal. I am amrityuhu, the a got lost there due to grammar rules. I am without death. I am ajaraha. I don't get old, being unchanging. And therefore, I am abhayaha, free from fear in the sense that nothing can threaten unchanging consciousness. Now the point, let me conclude the point I was making before. It's possible to have the cognitive shift, my true nature is Satchidananda Atma, air quotes, but then you still don't identify yourself with Satchidananda Atma, you still identify yourself as body and mind. This is that lingering identification we've talked about many times, especially when we talk about the role of Nididhyasana, Vedantic contemplation, which is meant to remove that habitual identification with the body and mind. Here, we have to take that step. Enlightenment is not knowing that, air quotes, your true nature is Satchidananda Atma. It's not the mere cognitive shift. Better to say it's a shift of identification. Instead of identifying with your body, mind, and senses, you now identify as Satchidananda Atma. When you use the word I, the first meaning that comes to your mind is Satchidananda Atma. That's the shift of identification. Puja Swamiji, my guru, used the term enlightened ahankara. We've had this discussion in other contexts. It's a big topic. I don't want to review it all. But to summarize that discussion, it is not so that the ahankara gets destroyed. The ahankara, ego, is an organizational principle in your mind. If it gets destroyed, you're not going to be able to function in an ordinary worldly sense. So therefore, we've said, instead of thinking that it gets destroyed, far better to understand that the ahankara becomes, so to speak, enlightened. And what that means is the ahankara is your sense of identity. Ordinarily, that sense of identity is I am Satchara, I am body, mind, and senses. When that sense of identity shifts so that you recognize I am not body, mind, senses, I am pure consciousness. That's the shift we're after. That's the we call the enlightened ahankara. Still present, but completely altered. No longer identifying with body, mind, senses. Not now identified with Satchidananda Atma. So there are two kinds of shift. By the way, there's a joke, I don't think you get this. Back in the 1960s, there was a big, 70s, I think, there was a big talk about paradigm shift. Cool. There was a paradigm shift going on. And the joke that was told there, this is a very American joke, the joke is, shift happens. Good, you all get that. So, that's a 40-year-old joke and you get it. I'm impressed. All right. So shift happens. So this shift happens at two levels. First is the cognitive shift, but I would argue more importantly is the shift in identification. And to demonstrate that shift of identification, notice that Shankara does not say here, Satchidananda is ajaha. Satchidananda is amaraha. Satchidananda, use the word atma. Atma is aja, unborn. Atma is amara, immortal. Atma is amrityu, not subject to death. Atma is ajara, doesn't grow old. Atma is bhaya, can't be threatened. That's third person. And it's all true. That's part of the cognitive shift. But notice he's using first person here, indicating that beyond the cognitive shift is a shift of identification. I am that Satchidananda Atma. And that Satchidananda Atma is Sarvajnaha. It's not stuck inside your head. It's all pervasive, therefore it illumines the mental activities of all beings that have minds. It is sarvadrik for the same reason. It is shuddha. We went through that several times in the last class. Shuddha means utterly unaffected by any external influence. Iti buddhaha, for knowing thus. So knowing thus, thinking thus, buddha, okay. Knowing thus, having this shift of identification. So just before we leave that idea behind, enlightenment is not merely a cognitive shift. Enlightenment is definitely based on this shift of identification where the ego drops its identification with body, mind, senses and now becomes fully identified with your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Iti buddhaha, for one who has recognized all this, na jayate, that person doesn't get reborn. Notice, freedom from rebirth is probably not the first thing in your mind when you come to classes. Why are you coming to class? Oh, I don't want to get reborn. I don't think many of you feel that way. But please recognize, in Shankara's time, people felt very differently. In a pre-scientific culture, there was so much focus on what happens after you're dead. And therefore, the focus on becoming free from rebirth. So we've talked before about the distinction between being a Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated while alive, and being Videha Mukta, being liberated after you're dead. I would say that that distinction was tremendously important in ancient times, perhaps less important today. And evidence for that is you didn't come to class because you didn't want to get reborn. In ancient times, that may indeed have been the driving force bringing people to the teachings of Vedanta. It's, I think, not just interesting, but it's important to understand these teachings in a cultural context and understand how much culture has changed from Shankaracharya's time to our time. Okay, continuing. Purvoktam yattamo bijam, purvoktam yattamo bijam, tannasti tivinishchayaha, tannasti tivinishchayaha. There's a typo here. It's tad-abhave, very crucial typo. Tad-abhave kuto janma, tad-abhave kuto janma, brahmaikatvam vijanataha, brahmaikatvam vijanataha. Yat tamo bijam. Tamas, darkness, represents ignorance. Ignorance, which is a bija. It is a term used in more technical discussion. They call it mula vidya. Mula, root, avidya, ignorance. A root ignorance, here seed. The root or seed for what? And it's the root of false identification. And the way that works is, going back to my guru's expression, self non-recognition is tamobija. It's that so-called veil of ignorance that partially covers your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Due to that covering, due to that ignorance, what follows is false identification with your body, mind, and senses. So we need to see the causal relationship between self non-recognition and false identification. This is such an important, this is very fundamental in Advaita Vedanta. Due to self non-recognition, which is a fancy way of saying ignorance, tamobijam. Due to that particular kind of ignorance, the necessary consequence, the result, is false identification with your body, mind, senses. We were all born ignorant. Therefore, we all naturally identified, even as children, with our body, mind, and senses. As soon as we developed a sense of I, I suppose a newborn doesn't even have that sense yet, but pretty soon they get the sense, hey, I need something, right? And then they're crying and all of this stuff starts. I'm kind of glad I missed that part of child raising. I don't know how patient I would have been with a child who cried constantly. Anyway, that's completely beside the point. The point is, as soon as you have a sense of identity, because you already have ignorance, self non-recognition, it is inescapable that you are going to develop false identification with body, mind, senses. So in that sense, that ignorance is the seed, the root cause of false identification. And it is pur voktum, it's been discussed before. But one who can say, in the second line, vinishchayaha, one who has ascertained what? Tannasti iti, that no longer exists. That root cause for false identification no longer exists. That means self non-recognition no longer exists. All this fancy language. That means, what is the absence of self non-recognition? Self-recognition. It's that simple. So this Shankara uses is very fancy language. Remember, Shankara was an expert at especially logic, and so we find some highly logic-filled expressions here, like this one. So one person, vinishchayaha, a person who has ascertained that the root cause of false identification no longer exists. It's been destroyed. This, then, let's go back to our earlier discussion about the shift of identification. When you know that your true nature, Atma Sarupa, is Satchidananda Atma, so that's a cognitive shift. Where is the self-recognition? I'm hoping you're this is a little subtle. I'm sure you're following it, but the point I'm trying to make is it's possible to have that cognitive shift. Atma is Satchidananda. Atma is my true nature. That which is said, here come the air quotes, that which is said to be my true nature, Atma, is Satchidananda Atma. But then you can still have the absence of self-recognition. That term, self-recognition, in Sanskrit, Atma Sakshatkara, the full and perfect recognition, realization of the truth of who you are, that's Atma Jnanam. That's Atma Vidya. That is I don't want to make this more complicated than it needs to be. That is the bridge between cognitive shift and shift of identification. So you start with cognitive shift. Something called Atma, which is said to be my true nature, is Satchidananda Atma. But then that statement leads you to reflect on me, I. And then you get it. Oh, I meaning the consciousness which is my essence, the consciousness which is present right now in this ordinary experience, I, as the conscious being who knows what's happening right now, I am Satchidananda Atma. There's a shift from cognitive, there's the transition from cognitive shift to shift of identification. So he continues, Shankara continues, tad abhave, and please make sure you follow the, that's a really bad typo. So tad abhave, in the absence of that tamo bijam, in the absence of ignorance, then Shankara asks, and even my translation got chopped here because I was using the typo, and I mistranslated because I didn't catch the typo. So the point Shankara makes here in the second half, tadabhave, in the absence of that ignorance about your true nature, in the absence of self non-recognition. Kutaha janma, how can you possibly get reborn? Brahma ekatvam vijanataha, for one who knows, Brahma ekatvam, the identity of your true nature with the one Brahman. So to recognize your true nature as it truly is to recognize your true nature as Brahman. Because that's the ultimate truth. So just to say that my true nature is pure consciousness, that's not quite there. It's such an important recognition when you'd really get it that I am pure consciousness, utterly independent of the body, mind, senses. That is such a crucial discovery, but it's not the final discovery. The final discovery is to realize that the consciousness which you are, that unchanging consciousness which you are, is indeed the underlying reality because of which everything exists, Brahman, and that's what the Mahavakya Tattvamasi eventually points to. So here, I want to go back to that. We'll do that in the next verse. So this idea of seed, that's the point we have to make. He says, kutaha janma, how could you be reborn? So we said already that was a big deal in Shankara's time, maybe less important today. But Shankara's making an interesting point here about rebirth, and he's saying that this tamo bijam, this seed in the form of ignorance, is actually the seed not just for this life, but for life after life after life after life. And that needs to be understood. Let me just go to the board. We've seen this before, but maybe not for a long time. I'll go to the board and just show you a causal sequence very briefly. I push this button and turn this one off. Yes. All right. So some of you will recognize this. A sequence. So we start with that tamo bijam, which is a fancy word for avidya, ignorance. Avidya, specifically, non-recognition of your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. Failing to recognize your own innate fullness and completeness, definitely you will experience kama, desire. So kama is the first sprout of the seed of ignorance. So the seed sprouts, the seed of ignorance sprouts into kama, desire, and then desire sprouts fruit like a sprout will then branch off in many ways and become manifold, and that manifold branching is the various karmas, the actions we engage in for the sake of fulfilling this kama. So, the seed of ignorance sprouts into desire. Desire naturally leads to efforts to fulfill those desires, and accumulation of karma causes what? After you die, those karmas drive you on to take another life, and then when you are reborn, you're reborn with ignorance. This is the endless loop. I said before that when your computer freezes, it's actually working furiously, but it's not doing anything important. It's just stuck in some... Ah, thank you. Thank you. It's just stuck in some kind of loop. So that's the point. So here, this loop of
this one, right?
Yeah. Loop of samsara. This is a samsara chakra, they call it. The cycle of samsara, the seed of ignorance, sprouts into kama, desire. Kama leads to karma. Karma means more accumulation, getting reborn again and again. You're always reborn ignorant. This is the term used. Samsara chakra. Okay.
Next.
Kshirat sarpir yato dhritya. Kshirat sarpir yato dhritya. Kshiptam tasmin apur vavata. Kshiptam tasmin apur vavata. Buddhya der gnyastata satyan. Buddha der gnyastata satyan. Nadehi purvavat bhavet. Nadehi purvavat bhavet. Let me introduce this. A common doubt. In fact, I think one of the questions for our satsang today, we'll see later. A common doubt is, once this cognitive shift takes place, shift happens. So if the shift goes from A to B, what's to prevent the shift from going from B to A? That which shifts can go on shifting. So this is the argument, and that leads to common misconceptions, like in order to be enlightened, you constantly have to think, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, which is pretty silly. Another issue, and an important issue, which many people bring up, and it says, can you forget? If you forget this knowledge, do you no longer maintain your enlightenment, leading then to the question about dementia? Suppose in old age you start losing mental faculties. So can dementia rob you of enlightenment? These are all important questions. And we'll try to answer those questions as we go through this verse. Let's see how Shankara anticipates that question with this verse. And basically he concludes that when... Actually, let's just see the verse, and then I'll make that point. He gives a wonderful metaphor. Let me, instead of dragging you through the Sanskrit, I'll give the metaphor first, then we'll see the first half. So when you start with whole milk, and you do this churning thing, and you create butter. So now you've got the remaining milk, and you've got a lump of butter. Does the butter stick to the paddle or what? I don't even know. It floats. Okay, you see how much I know. Okay, so after all this churning stuff, you got butter floating on the top. So you take that butter out. Now, suppose, and this is Shankara's explanation, he says, kshirat sarpihi. So suppose you have some sarpis, which is that butter, which yatha, just as udhritya, when you separate that sarpis, that butter, kshirat, from the milk. If you separate the butter from the milk and you scrape it off the top, and then he says, suppose you kshiptam tasmin, you throw it back in the pot. You've been churning, you take that butter off, and for whatever reason you throw it back in. I don't know why you would do that, but Shankara observes, apparently he did observe this, he says, napurvavat. It doesn't become like it was before churning, which is the butter remains separate. This is an interesting metaphor. It doesn't, I'm not sure if it relates that much to modern times. None of us have done that, I presume. So anyway, the example Shankara gives, common in his time. Once you've separated the butter from the milk, it doesn't go back. And he gives this as an example. He says in the middle of the third line, nyaha. Nya, nyas, is Jnaha, one who knows, an enlightened person. Jnaha, an enlightened person, Tata, who in the same way has we have to bring that term Udhritya, bring it down. For an enlightened person who has discerned his or her true nature, buddhya dehe asatyat, by extracting one's true nature from buddhi adi, from mind, senses, body, etc., which are asatyat, which are not your true nature. So an enlightened person who has... This is separation. So one who separates the butter from the milk, one who discerns Atma as being different from body, mind, senses, that's the metaphor. And Shankara says in the conclusion here, na dehi purvavat bhavet, one who has discerned that jnaha, the enlightened person, na purvavat bhavet, doesn't become like they were before. The dehi, the embodied person. So what Shankara is saying through this metaphor is once you have not the cognitive shift, but the shift of identification, we have to go back to that. That cognitive shift, how about this? See if I can make this up. Suppose I am a Vedantin who undergoes the cognitive shift, my true nature, that which is said to be my true nature is Satchidananda Atma, the pendulum shifts. Shift happens, I now have this new perspective. Suppose, I'm making this up on the fly here, just an argument. Suppose, having made that cognitive shift, I now begin to study a lot of neuroscience, and I become convinced by the latest findings that what I call consciousness is an artifact of the activity of the neurons in my prefrontal cortex. I become convinced of that. Suppose. By the way, I've studied all that stuff. I won't be convinced. but I'm just using this as an argument, right? An argument to show how what shifts from A to B could presumably shift from B to A. So if you study Vedanta first, and then you study neuroscience later, you might undergo this pendulum kind of shift, which is certainly not helpful. So, Shankara's point here is he says once that shift takes place, you don't go back. Like the butter doesn't return to the whole milk, your sense of identity, not cognitive, your sense of self, your sense of I, doesn't go back. And we need to illustrate that. The illustrations are many in the scriptures about this shift of identity. Not cognitive shift of identity. A good example, I think all of you know the 10th man story, which is quite long, so I don't want to retell it. A short form of the 10th man story is the story of Karna. So Karna grew up thinking that he was he was from a lowly caste, and then complicated story. My gosh, so super simplified story. Karna meets his mother. He was given up as an infant. He didn't know. He was given up as an infant, so he meets his birth mother, It's like in modern times, somebody who was born through this IVF. You know, maybe we should remake the story. I don't want to do that right now. I have to give it some thought. We'll turn this into an IVF story. Anyway, in vitro fertilization, for anyone who's not familiar with that expression. Anyway, Karna, without knowing, meets his birth mother and mother's, who is royalty, and she says, "You are my son." So, after Karna is told, and most of you will know the story, anyway, I don't want to elaborate on it. After Karna, and you get the point. After Karna is told, "You are my son," can he forget that? How would he forget? The moment he was told, "You are my son," there was not merely a cognitive shift. Oh, she is my birth mother, and she has just told me that I am her son. That's the cognitive part. But then comes the shift of identity. I am her son. That I is the so-called enlightened ahankara. Karna here is metaphorically enlightened by that statement. And Karna is not going to forget. It's not a matter of memory. When Karna goes back out, when Karna goes to the battlefield, does he have to constantly remind himself, I am son of Kunti, I am son of Kunti, I am. He doesn't need to remind himself. It's not a matter of memory because this identity has undergone transformation. That transformation is permanent, like the transformation in the case of the butter. That transformation is permanent. So two points. You don't have to go on saying I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman any more than Karna has to remind himself, I am son of Kunti, I am son of Kunti, I am a Pandava, I am a Pandava. He doesn't need to remind himself, according to the story. And if you don't know the story, maybe I should have. The tenth man story is better, but it takes it takes too long to tell that story. Okay, what about the other possible challenge I introduced before? And that was, what about dementia? Suppose Karna gets dementia. And this is the metaphor. So Karna, let's make it more realistic. He's on the battlefield. And he gets a severe concussion. That didn't happen. That's not the way the story plays out. But we're trying to have fun with this story. So he's on the battlefield. He has a concussion and amnesia. So he doesn't remember. Some kind of amnesia where you lose your sense of identity. I think that's true of dementia as well. You lose your sense of who you are. In dementia, for complex reasons, I think we need not discuss here. So suppose Karna ends up in that kind of condition. He is conscious, he's alert, he's responsive, but he has no idea where am I, what's going on, who am I, etc. All of that is not accessible to him. So then you might argue, well, he's lost his sense of self. Yeah, because anything that happens in your mind is dependent on your brain. When the brain is injured, the mind is going to reflect it. Actually, that won't be helpful. So, from a Vedantic standpoint, what we would say is that should an enlightened person just see, and I think maybe we'll end this class a little earlier. Next two verses go together. So let me just, we'll conclude with this rather important topic. Because many people have asked, if an enlightened person gets dementia, will they lose enlightenment? Well, first of all, and to answer this question from a Vedantic standpoint, Atma was always enlightened, right? There's no enlightenment for Atma. How does dementia affect consciousness? If you followed our discussions, you should be able to say consciousness is utterly unaffected by dementia or any other mental or physical problem. The essence of karma, the essence of karna is that consciousness, correct? Karna's swarupa, karna's essential nature is that consciousness. That consciousness was enlightened before, enlightened now, enlightened later, never unenlightened, never subject to the problems of the body and mind. From that standpoint, how can you say enlightenment goes away? Consciousness remains unaffected by dementia, by mental illness, by brain injury, by any and all of that. Now, the more difficult topic is, the American expression, yeah, but. Good. Yeah, but the personality named Karna can no longer enjoy his true status. That's a fact. But the personality named Karna is not the truth of who he is. The truth of who he is consciousness. That consciousness remains enlightened. So, if you say, yeah, but his mind is affected, well, that's brain injury. If silly metaphors. If an enlightened person loses his or her legs, they can't walk, right? Does it mean they're not enlightened? It means they're enlightened, but they can't walk. If an enlightened person has a brain injury, they can't think. What is the difference between those two? An enlightened person with no legs can't walk. An enlightened person with a brain injury can't think. This is just a fact of the human condition. So this argument about losing enlightenment is a fallacious argument. And Shankara establishes it here using that butter and milk example. I've amplified it here with several examples. I think we'll also take it up one more time in our satsang that follows this class. So if you want, stay back and we'll take it up one more time. And by the way, you could ask questions at that time and we'll take up those questions. So this would be a good place to conclude today's class a little early because the next two verses go together and we don't have time for that. So we'll conclude. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma satgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. That's it.